Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be with you on this Tuesday. And to be with Tom Nash, our guest, who I feel like I haven't seen in a long time. theologian Tom Nash, author Tom Nash, speaker Tom Nash. It's great to see you again, Tom. Thanks for being here with us for Open Forum. You remember how this is done, right? They get to ask anything they want.
I am aware of the rules and... That old Open Forum thing always keeps you on your toes, indeed.
It does keep you on your toes.
Great to be with you, my friend, and the whole Catholic Answers team and audience.
And also a special day for you because, as you told us earlier, Darren and I, via email, that this would be your father's 96th birthday, your father, Joe. So happy birthday to Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We pray for the repose of his soul. A very holy man. I was there to be present when he died back in 2015. If anybody wants to read the remembrance I gave at his funeral mass, they can go to Catholic Answers, the National Catholic Register under my name and my post there, and they're welcome to do that. So, yeah, it's a memorable day, and there's always a joy when someone dies in a holy way and lives a good life. There's that consolation. You miss someone, especially someone like your father, but a real blessing to know that he lived a faithful life and entered it with God's mercy into eternity.
Wonderful.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just a good day otherwise. I got the new Catholic, the new book coming out, 20 Answers, the Rosary coming out from Catholic Answers. So that's good news. And
I'm not going to talk about any of your other books this whole hour. I'm just going to mention 20 Answers, the Rosary, because it's the new one.
So, yes.
Yeah. 20 Answers, the Rosary. Tom, how did we go this long without a 20 Answers book about the Rosary? It's like
I don't know. You know, Tim Staples is our Marian theologian, and he's done a fine book on Behold Your Mother. That is the title of his magnum opus on the Blessed Mother. But also, he's done one on the Blessed Mother, 20 Answers, a shorter booklet. And I worked with Todd Aguilar-Loro, director of publishing at Catholic Answers Press, and he says, "Hey, let's do something on the Rosary." And I think it's important to have something on the Rosary because people oftentimes see the Rosary as simply a Marian prayer, which it is, but actually, it's it's kind of like the gospel on the string, so to speak, as a friend of mine once said. That is, we are meditating on the mysteries, the key mysteries of Christ's life and how they come to fruition ultimately in his disciple par excellence, the Blessed Mother. And so we realize that the 50 Hail Marys are enabling us to meditate and draw closer to Jesus through Mary. And so we is very much Christocentric. After all, she's the Mother of God. That's why we revere her and, you know, have such great respect and reverence. And she helps us in this regard. And we see that, you know, prayer to the saints is not a problem. Also that the different mysteries, including the luminous mysteries, I was very glad to see those come along in 2002 because I always thought there was kind of like we go from finding in the temple all the way to Holy Week. It's like, well, what about that public ministry part? So I'm glad we cover that and also some tips about how to pray the Rosary more fruitfully and how really it's not just about concentrating on the words, but meditating on the mysteries, Cy, and listening. Very important with prayer, not just telling God, but listening to him. And that why we have the repeated prayers, it enables us to center our mind in a legitimate sense of that word centered and be able to hear what God might be saying to us about our work, about our relationships, husband, wives, any issue that might be going on, how God could be guiding us in our life and wants to guide us in our life.
I want to ask you a really Catholic question, and then I am going to the phones. But since you just wrote the book, this is as Catholic a question as you only a Catholic can answer the question that I could ask the question I'm about to ask you. but because the book is 20 Answers on the Rosary, Catholic Answers, 20 Answers on the Rosary that Tom Nash has just published, here's my the most possible – this is the most Catholic question that it's possible to ask. Can you get an indulgence for praying the rosary?
Yes, particularly in a group.
Oh, okay.
Yes, in a group.
You cover that in the book or no?
We do hit the indulgence part in the book. Yes, as I recall off the top of my head, right? Yes.
Now, I always heard that there was an indulgence for praying the rosary in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, but am I wrong about that, or is that?
Well, I think and I think you can have a partial indulgence in any event.
Okay.
And
because I need those.
Yes, you and me both, brother. You and me both.
You can give them away, too. Indulgences, you can give them to the dead, right?
You can. And so it's with, you know, God and this wonderful, you know, Jesus. It's they don't take away, you know, the whole thing of intercessory prayer is not a distraction from God, but shows about the glory of God and how he gets his disciples to collaborate with him to advance his salvific mission. So it's always a both and with Catholicism, not an either or.
888-318-7884, the number. Let us go back to the phones. You're ready, right, Tom?
I am ready.
Okay. Austin in New York City, watching on YouTube Live. You are next, Austin. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Hi. I mistakenly gave the wrong verse to the person who takes the calls, but my question is, what are the works mentioned in Romans 4:2?
In Romans 4:2. Okay.
Yeah, because it's like this is before the Mosaic Law.
Yes, 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 yes. For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. And yes, this is before the Mosaic ones, before those works. Now, I think it should be clear that if we are saying, now you may have heard from some Protestants that if they read that passage, like, well, that's before the Mosaic Law, so you can't say these are works of the law. But if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. Well, here's the thing. I mean, we cannot in and of ourselves save ourselves no matter what good work. And works only gain grace by being centered in God. Now, it says a little later on in that passage, Abraham believed and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Well, a foundational work of the Christian life is indeed faith. Faith is a work. And it goes, to one who works, his wages are reckoned as a gift, but as his due. And to one who does not work but trusts, who justifies the ungodly, his faith is reckoned as righteousness. So now it goes on to say, David pronounces a blessing. Now here we are, works of the law. God reckons righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose iniquities are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not reckon his sin. So we need to realize that while works in and of themselves cannot save us, they do make a difference in whether we say yes or no to Christ. And we know this because Paul says it earlier in Romans 1:8-31, chapter 1, verses 18-32, where he talks about people who have known the law of God written on their heart, but have turned away from it, right? And that they themselves will have to answer for their wrongdoing. And he specifically speaks about various types of sexual wrongdoing. In addition, it's very clear that in Romans 2, for anyone who wants to say works don't matter, for St. Paul in the letter of the Romans, he says, for he will render to every man according to his works. To those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory, this is verse 6 and following of chapter 2, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 2, for he will render to every man according to his works. To those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and immortality, he will give eternal life. But for those who are factious and do not obey the truth but obey wickedness, there will be wrath and fury. So I think we need to realize that there is an equivocation there on works and what they mean, and that indeed works make a big difference, properly understood works, not in terms of the law as if we can earn our salvation by those works alone, but rather that we accept or reject the gift of God, the gift of salvation that God gives us or offers us through our works. So in that sense, we say yes or no to God through our works. So works are crucial, even though we cannot save ourselves by them, by our works alone, for sure.
Austin, thanks for the call. I hope it was helpful. I got to keep moving because, as I said, the lines are very, very full. And actually, Richard in Toronto, Canada, has been waiting a long, long time. So I'm actually going to go to the break a little late. I'm just going to go right to Richard because he's been waiting an unfair amount of time. Richard in Toronto, Canada, watching on YouTube. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Hi. Hi. I was worried I was forgotten or dropped.
I'm sorry, Richard. You were forgotten a little bit.
No worries.
I apologize.
I actually wanted, with all due respect to Tom, I want to ask this to Tim, but in fairness, I'll ask it to Tom. But before I start, Si, I noticed last video you were very frustrated over people lying about the reason for them calling, and I agree that was unacceptable. But I do know that they were filtering and canceling calls on questions that were at all contentious, even if asked in good faith. And I think when you guys do that, that incentivizes that sort of behavior. I'm not telling you guys how to run your show, but I think that's worth some consideration, that purposefully censoring or stopping any questions that might be a little bit more contentious towards Bishop Barron basically induces that sort of lying and bad behavior.
Okay, Richard, you said that very respectfully. I appreciate the feedback. And I can promise you we take it quite seriously and we will consider every word of what you said. So thank you, Richard.
Yeah, because I was actually censored, and I had a very milquetoast question about voting yesterday. So I can.
Oh, well, that's probably why we're censored. We don't want milquetoast questions from Canada. You're going to call from Canada. Come
yeah, exactly.
No, I do appreciate it. Thank you, Richard, for your constructive criticism.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. My question is actually about the Pope, but I'm going to take a little bit of a different angle and ask, like, to what extent can we sometimes be too charitable when dealing with the Pope? And, you know, Tim and Trent and stuff have spent a lot of time trying to justify, or and Carlos, while talk about how we might have misinterpreted this question or that question or this comment or that comment. At some point, even if it's unintended, the Pope's comments are doing damage to the church and to the faith. My own mother, who's a misguided Catholic, reads what he says and uses a justification for why gay marriage is okay. I subscribe on YouTube videos to traditional Protestants. They're parading videos about how the Pope is in support of gays, even though I know that's not correct. So I'm just trying to say, like, the damage is being done. Thousands and thousands of people are being misled. And more to the point, Tim just earlier said Vigano was going off the rails with one statement about a resignation of the Pope, yet he would never use that sort of language when describing or discussing the Pope, who's done much more damage. And I think there's a little bit of a disconnect. People say it's Pope-splaining, which I think is a little bit rude, but I think there is something there in some of the more mainstream Catholic outlets not taking the Pope to task, even if his statements can sometimes just be accidents.
Richard, before I let Tom answer, I just want to say I wish every caller that disagrees with us or has a problem with us was as generous and normal in just speaking to us like people as you are. I really appreciate that. Amen. You would be amazed at how rare that has become. Tom, go ahead. You can reply however you like.
Yes, Richard, I think you make an important point, and I think the key is how we respond to the Pope, because he is, after all, the vicar of Christ, which doesn't mean he's infallible on anything. Of course not. And we need to know that classic, as is discussed in the Catechism, section 890, 891, 892, talking about infallibility. I mean, one of the ways is a solemn definition, such as the dogma of the Assumption or Immaculate Conception. Another one would be in an ecumenical council, such as Trent, where a number of things were defined, and were defined so by having anathemas attached to them. Also, there can be the ordinary magisterium of the church, which contraception would fall under that. I think you make a good point. Now, maybe we can talk another time about Bishop Vigano. I think, unlike some others, for example, the other day we saw Bishop Tobin of Providence. And what did Bishop Tobin point out? He says, this is, he affirmed what the church's teaching was regarding civil unions and, of course, just sexual relations between homosexual persons, people with same-sex attraction in general, but he asked the Pope to clarify. And I think we always need to do, there's that thing, the fine line I would argue, Richard, is that we need to be respectful of the Pope and his office, because what we say and how we say it can be a stumbling block for people coming into full communion with the church or for staying in full communion with the church. So we need to be constructively critical. Scott Hahn, Professor Scott Hahn, great theologian and a friend of mine, I'm blessed, used to be my neighbor when I lived in Steubenville, Ohio. He pointed out and cited the doctrine, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the 2003 document citing dealing with same so-called civil unions. And he pointed out how that this cannot be reconciled. So I think the problem becomes is if the Pope, and I do believe he was misrepresented, as even the National Catholic Reporter pointed out, that the Pope in this interview from last year said that same-sex relations cannot be countenanced in any way. At the same time, when you say civil unions can be somehow allowed, that sends a discordant signal. It gives a little bit of confusion. I think it's important to distinguish about how we can provide for the insurance needs of people with same-sex attraction versus blessing or giving social approval thereof to the unions. A classic example would be in the Archdiocese of San Francisco in the late 90s, early 2000s era, that Archbishop Lavada, who is being consulted, who consulted various Orthodox Catholic bishops, said that for those people who are working for the city of San Francisco, for example, and they said, hey, if you want to get anything to help out with, Catholic Charities money coming from the city of San Francisco, et cetera, then you have to give benefits for these people in domestic partnership board, in civil unions. And so what they did is said, okay, anybody who's single, who's working for the city or working for the church as well, we will give you as an individual, whether it's your mom or maybe your sibling or your friend, we'll give you, for that other person, we'll give you benefits. But we're not going to give it in terms of blessing a union. I think that's what needs to be done. I think it's important for the Pope to clarify that. My concern with the Pope is that when he doesn't clarify that, it just invites more confusion. So I think we need to be vigilant and stay what the church's teaching clearly is, and at the same time speak well of the Pope and say, yep, the Pope needs to clarify this, but not go into all these kinds of things saying like he's not the Pope or he's this or he's that. Those things will scatter the sheep, both those who are in full communion as well as those who might come into full communion. And I think we need to be vigilant. I think Bishop Vigano, charitably stated Archbishop Vigano, has dropped the ball in some of the things he said about the Pope.
Because they scattered
the
sheep.
On getting,
the
yeah, he's, yeah. yeah.
Tom, I mean, I gotta leave it there because I did leave the break for a long time. But I do appreciate you. I not that we coordinated this, but we talked a little bit about Cardinal Levada earlier. And I wish more people would look into, because Cardinal Levada is a close collaborator with Benedict XVI. He's extremely solid archbishop and cardinal. And I wish more people would look into what he did. But we have to take a break, Tom. I really want to thank our caller from Canada, Richard from Toronto. I do appreciate the very, very civil tone. I'm glad we get to have a civil conversation. Marie, put Richard on the banned caller list. He can't call back anymore. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Prayer changes everything. We read in sacred scripture that when we come to God in prayer, He changes our lot. It isn't so much that the circumstances change. It is that we change, and therefore we see the circumstances differently. Prayer does everything for us. It is indeed the air that fills our soul, just as the oxygen fills our lungs. We can't do without prayer. To do without prayer means we languish and we die. God wants us to have life and to have it to the full.
Welcome back. It's Catholic Answers Live. What? Why are you laughing at me for banning Richard? Darren's laughing at me. Just ban everyone in Toronto. All right. That's the kind of mood I'm in now. Just ban the whole
city
of Toronto.
Don't ban everyone in Toronto. Right. I have friends in Toronto.
All right. That's even more reason, Tom. Tom Nash is our guest. Our number is 888-318-7884. It is an open forum. Tom, I want to give you a minute to talk about, I know that you are concerned about this wonderful Catholic priest in India who's been unjustly imprisoned, and I know people around the world are working for his liberty. Can you just say something about that situation?
Sure. His name is Father Stan Swamy, S-W-A-M-Y, and he is a Jesuit. He is from Ranchi, India, and he has been removed and taken over to Mumbai, where he's, you know, 83, 84 years old, and he has Parkinson's, and he's also hard of hearing, and he's concerned about getting, you know, COVID, perhaps, given, you know, the spread of COVID worldwide, including in a big city like Mumbai. And basically, they have given him trumped-up charges that he supported a Maoist group, Mao as in communist China, Mao.
Yeah.
And so they took him out. He's basically been working for the poor his whole life, dedicated his whole priestly life, I should say. And he has also helped people who've been, you know, put in jail and then kept in jail without a trial for a long period, and particularly poor people who don't have the means that more affluent people would. So this is a man who's dedicated his life. The Asian Bishops Federation has come out and spoken out. I know that the State Department has been contacted by his Jesuit superior, Secretary Pompeo has been contacted. So for people to pray for Father Swamy, and also they feel inclined to call the White House and say something to the State Department, they're welcome to, and just to pray in general and to spread the word, because this is an injustice, and you know, we hope and pray it ends quickly.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate that. We have we get calls from folks in India, and you just have the sense that because of the internet, the world is smaller and smaller, and these things we might not have known about in the past, we do know about, and we want to support our brothers and sisters, especially when they face these horrible crises. And it does happen all over the world, and India can do better. India is a great country that can do better. We're not talking about a third-rate country here. Not that there are third-rate countries, but I'm of course thinking of Canada. No, I'm sorry.
You're not helping yourself with Canada.
That's terrible.
You're never helping the borders.
I'm sorry. Richard upset me. No, he did not. 888-318-7884, the number. Hey, let's go to the UAE, actually, United Arab Emirates. Charles on the line. Let me just make sure I push the right button here, Charles, because we don't want to lose you. Go ahead, Charles. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Hi, guys. Yeah, hi. I have two Bible passages with some difficulty to interpret. One is Matthew 6:33.
You got that, Tom? Matthew 6:33?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, seek first the kingdom of the Lord and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Go ahead, Charles. Give us the other one.
I would like to know the definition of righteousness here. And the second one is Matthew 24:15.
Yes.
They talk about the 10-year, you know, sacrilege of Daniel.
Okay, so you want to take these one at a time, Charles?
Sure.
Or Tom, yeah, go ahead. Let's start with Matthew 6:33. Give us the passage, and then Charles would like to know what the word righteousness means in Matthew 6:33.
Sure. I'll pull it up real quickly, and it is, I just know that one from heart because it's a favorite of mine. But, you know, seek first the kingdom of the Lord and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Righteousness and that thing is to the holiness of God, you know? I mean, God gives us righteousness by virtue of, you know, when we are baptized, there's a righteousness in terms of removal of sin, but there's also a righteousness in terms of moral righteousness. So in this case, we would seek that righteousness, the removal of sin, by seeking the sacrament of baptism. But it's also it's that way of holiness. That's how it's translated in the New American Bible, that we are to seek God and we are to seek holiness. So in that sense, it is to be, as we talked to that earlier caller, as Paul says in Romans 2 and Romans 1, that we need to respond to God's gift. We cannot boast in ourselves of our works as if we can save ourselves. At the same time, we can't say, well, I just believe in, you know, once saved, always saved, it doesn't matter anymore. No, it's a both and. We need to realize that without God, we cannot even exist. Without God, we can't get to heaven. But we also, because of any love, like any loving relationship, we need to say yes to God on a daily basis. And we do so through our works and our choices, our, you know, moral yeses and nos to God and to loving God and loving neighbor. As we heard just the other day, that is what the law of God in the New Testament is all summed up. That is to love God and to love your neighbor as yourself. And so that would be the first one. And now the second
Matthew 24, one. Was it Matthew 24, 15, Charles?
No, Matthew 24, 33, right? Oh. Says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. No, sorry.
Yes.
No, that is Matthew 24, 15, yes.
24:15.
Matthew 24, 15, okay. So what? When you see the desolating sacrilege by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who... Is that the one you're speaking of?
That doesn't seem like what you're looking for.
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay, so right. So you want to know what about the passage about the desolating abomination?
Correct.
You want to know what?
Okay.
Though? What do you want to know?
What that desolation is, for example?
Yeah. No, what, is it a symbol or is it about, some people say it's about Pope, that is related to Pope, but I'm not sure.
Oh, related to the Pope.
No, no, yeah. Okay, no, fair enough.
I mean, the primary reference in that regard would have to do, for example, I mean, in the Old Covenant, you know, Antiochus Epiphanes, when they went in and they desecrated the temple back in the Old Covenant. And then in the New Covenant, we see, too, that, well, not in the New Covenant, but before the New Covenant, in the early days of that transitional time where the temple is defiled again by the Pope.
By the Roman Emperor, yeah.
That's not to do with the Pope.
Okay, so maybe we can just clear that up a little bit, because I want to, because Charles is all the way over in the UAE and there's a little bit of music playing over. So we'll talk about the emperor and the destruction of the temple and how this relates to that when we come back.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live.
Tom Nash, our guest. Tom has a brand new book out from Catholic Answers Press. It's called 20 Answers the Rosary. And it's available now. You can go over to shop.catholic.com. And not only is it available, it's on sale with everything else over there at shop.catholic.com, which means Tom's not going to make as much money from his, what do you call that? His royalties. His royalties, will be reduced. Charles in the UAE. Okay, so I just wanted to get a clear answer for him. And we were having like the music playing and all that, and he's calling from halfway around the world. So let's just give him a clear answer. When you see the desolating abomination spoken of through Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. Jesus made this prophecy in Matthew's gospel in, chapter 24, verses 15 and 16. So all Charles wants to know is, what is Jesus talking about?
Okay, what did he talk about when the reference to Daniel is
But what he's prophesying something that's going to happen in the future. So what is Jesus pointing to?
Well, he's speaking about approximately the destruction of the temple, and that it was defiled by the Roman Empire in 70 AD when they destroyed it. The one to Daniel refers to what they destroyed it, the desecration of it, of the temple in 167, when the Greeks came in, when Antiochus Epiphanes came in with his army and destroyed the sacred elements, relics, vessels, I should say, of the temple, and also erected an idol. That was in 167 BC. We go to 70 AD, and that's what happens with regard to the final destruction of the temple.
In other words, Jesus makes this prophecy. 40 years later, the prophecy comes through, and included as part of this prophecy is, some of you standing here will be alive when this comes. And it did happen. Now, I've been told, Tom, that the part where he says flee to the mountains and you know, get running when you see these things happening actually did save the lives of Christians who fled Jerusalem when Vespasian came. Have you ever heard that might be true?
Yes.
The Christians,
absolutely, and because they didn't, they knew that this was a time based upon the prophecy that they should leave. In some ways, the Christian Jews were ostracized, or they were on the outs by the non-Christian Jews because they didn't stay and fight the Romans. But of course, they knew, according to Christ, that this was not supposed to happen, and they should not be trying to take on the Romans to get a political earthly kingdom, but rather, while there should be justice and peace, that Christ is king, and we should not be looking for a political Messiah, which obviously Christ was not. And so what they were seeking out with regard to fighting Rome was not part of salvation history, and so they did not participate, and in fact saw the signs of the times, if you will, and left. Yeah. Now, some other people will say, well, gee, what about later on, this abomination, desolation? Could it apply to a pope? Could we have a pope who's not really the pope? We'll oftentimes hear that in anti-Catholic polemics, who will say that, oh, the pope is going to be the Antichrist. Well, no, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. Jesus Christ, who is the king, and we are reminded that Jesus is king, because even in when we have an interregnum between popes, we know that we always have a father in heaven, and Jesus is always on his throne. So we realize that this is Christ's church, and ultimately respect the Pope because he's the vicar of Christ. People have talked about how Pope Francis is somehow not a valid pope. Not so, and anyone who's participated in the election affirmed the legitimacy of it. They said this about John the 23rd before, and said Cardinal Siri was the validly elected pope back in 1958, even though Cardinal Siri was trying to still become pope in 1978 and never protested about it. And he was, you know, one of the leading candidates going into the conclave that elected Pope John Paul II, Karol Wojtyła. So I think when people see things that there are confusion going on or difficulties in the world and a slide in culture, we want all this clarity and moral perfection, and that's not necessarily going to be the case. And we realize we have the church, we have the church's teaching. The Pope did affirm, as even the National Catholic Reporter has stated, that indeed he cannot countenance homosexual sex. Although I do agree that clarity on the fact of the unions shouldn't be countenanced, and as you said, Bishop Levada, Archbishop Levada, Cardinal Levada.
You say Levada, I say Levada. You say
he
tomato.
Said Levada. I mentioned.
I say tomato.
Person in D.C. It's Levada.
Tom, I'm feeling very, very sheepish at the moment because our next caller is from Canada. And,
okay.
So let me just be. I'm just really going to behave myself. So be polite, Tom.
Michelle in Manitoba, Canada, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. You are next, and you are very welcome here, as all Canadians are.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So I'm calling in. I'm wondering what the current church teaching is on polygenism. I know that Pope Pius XII wrote on this in Humani Generis, but I've since seen articles and Catholic articles, including one on the Catholic Answers website, that seems to suggest that the teaching can evolve. I'm wondering if this is true or if that has already been defined, and whether it was defined infallibly as something we're not free to believe, or what the case is. So I'm hoping you can shed some light on that.
Yes, Michelle. I think you, Stacy Trasankos, who are our friend and colleague and scientist and speaker for Catholic Answers, has several good articles. And I'll give you, for more details, I'll refer anyone to the Catholic Answers website, Catholic.com. Stacy's last name is Trasankos. And in a nutshell, what we know clear, what is de fide, is that we had first parents, right? And is presented in Genesis 1-3, Adam and Eve, that we know who they are. We don't know who they are per se, but we know that we had first parents and they committed an original sin. Where polygenism comes into it is, could they have themselves had non-human parents? That is, could they have been conceived by an act of God and conceived in non-human precursor, pre-human beings, who were ensouled by a special act of God and then born and then came together and married. Is that possible? Is that within the realm of Catholic teaching? Well, yes, as Stacy would say, that is within the realm of Catholic teaching. That would not go against the church's teaching on original sin. All that would have to do is say that we might have had a different origin than a special creation of Adam and Eve. And we don't necessarily take Genesis 1-11, and particularly Genesis 1-3, as strict history necessarily. And so could they have had parents in that sense? They talk about polygenism, but there's only two first parents in the sense of made in the image and likeness of God, human beings. But is it possible that they, by special creation of God, could have ensouled the progeny of two non-humans? Yes, it's possible.
I got to interrupt you there, Tom. So that would mean a biological polygenism, but as far as the soul, the immortal soul, then we would still have exactly two parents.
Exactly. In terms of human beings and in terms of original sin,
I got you.
There is only an Adam and Eve, a first parents. So
okay.
Only
so
in terms
that's
of
one
a precursor.
Solution to the problem.
Yeah,
we don't
exactly
know that that's the right. But we just that's one.
No,
Michelle,
it is logically possible. We don't know for certain.
What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, we all would have, you know, been generated through Adam and Eve and come from them as our first parents. And so then the encyclical, the Humani Generis statement that Pope Pius XII wrote, would that be, is that considered infallible, or what is the authority associated with that encyclical?
Well, the Pope was very careful with his wording.
Yeah.
That's the first thing to notice.
He doesn't. He even qualifies his wording there, and it's not. And I think it's precisely because of this kind of a possibility, and so as to not preclude that possibility, that he was measured in his words. And so if one looks at Humani Generis, and it's Humani with a human with an I, and then Generis, Generis, they will see that he was, with regard to this question, qualified and didn't close off the possibility, provided it didn't go against the faith, as opposed to that we could have multiple human parents, and that, you know, this group came from Adam and Eve, that group came from Mary and John, and et cetera, et cetera, because then there would be no original sin, which has been communicated throughout. So the church is very clear that is original sin. So provided that that is not, that the two human first parents, Adam and Eve, as that is kept, it's possible that they could have had, they might not have resulted as by a special creation of God. Here's Adam and here's Eve. They could have been the offspring of two non-humans, but they themselves ensouled in the womb of these two non-humans as human persons.
Okay, Michelle, I want to go back to you because this is a tough one. Is it making sense?
It is. So again, sorry, I just want to make sure that I understand. So we would have, we we would all be descendants of Adam and Eve as the first human beings with souls. So
absolutely,
we all came from children of Adam and Eve, literally.
Yes. And so in number 37, okay, it says, when, however, there is a question of another conjectural opinion, namely polygenism, the children of the church by no means enjoy such liberty. So that if it's polygenism whereby it is going against the teaching on original sin, then it's a problem. It cannot be countenanced. If, on the other hand, it would, you know, there could be precursors, pre-human precursors to Adam and Eve, who procreated Adam and Eve, and God ensouled them as human persons in the wombs of these pre-human precursors of Adam and Eve. That's a possibility. Don't know if it's the case.
Okay.
It's just a possibility.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'll have to kind of listen again and make sure that I'm understanding correctly. So then basically we're not free to believe then that God allowed other human, you know, beings that may have evolved biologically with souls.
That's correct.
Had to have been descendants of Adam and Eve.
Yeah, anybody with a soul comes from Adam and Eve thereafter. There are no separate creations of human persons after Adam and Eve that would, you know, somehow think, well, gee, Adam and Eve had an original sin, but this, you know, this couple over here, couple number two, they didn't have an original sin. Or if they did, well, we've got their original sin and this other people sinning. No, there is a unity of the human race following Adam and Eve. And so that from them, original sin, their original sin is then passed on to all human persons thereafter. There are no human persons who would come after Adam and Eve who are not descendants of Adam and Eve, to summarize.
Michelle, I'm glad we had that conversation. I did. That's one that people struggle with, or we all struggle with. I mean, so I wanted to let you and Tom have some extended discussion. As he said, Stacey Trisankos has a lot of materials on that. Jimmy Akin has a good body of material on that now. You could check his website, jimmyakin.com. It is something that is in the formative stages still. I think that would be fair to say, Tom, that a solution. On the one hand, there may not be a solution because this is something that happened so long ago. We literally can't see it. We don't know. But but there's ongoing discussions about how exactly do you square all of the different parts of this. And it's kind of an exciting thing.
The scientific evidence and where the church, it's a both and. The church is not at odds. It's, you know, faith and reason go together.
Right.
And as Stacey says so well, and it's been said throughout, we've seen great scientists throughout the church. And the scientific method was created because we thought the world was intelligible because it was created. That all comes from Catholic scientists.
And this is this is not necessarily something you could see or observe in the fossil record.
No, not strictly. This side of heaven, we're not going to get a satisfactory answer. You know, it's possible that we can't get a definitive, as you said, we can't get a definitive answer based upon the information we have, even in the material realm.
Tom Nash is our guest. Thanks, Michelle. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It's open forum. Any question at all, welcome. 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have a very hard time sometimes, and I'm so frustrated. I mean, frustrated, frustrated. Somebody says, how'd you do all this, Mother? I say, I didn't. And they look at me. The Lord did. God does everything. Without me, he said, you do nothing.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
I having a great day here at Catholic Answers. Thanks to everybody who has called. And those who are on the line, we're going to try our best to get to everybody before the top of the hour. As a matter of fact, I don't know. You never know how long Tom's answer is going to be. Sometimes they're short, sometimes they're long. So I never know with Tom, but I think we could even get one or two more calls in if you wanted. 888. I'm not saying that in a mean way, Tom. I just never know. 888-318-7884, the number. Tom is the author of the multi-award-winning brand new book, 20 Answers Rosary. It has won many, many awards and accolades. Is that correct?
That may be presumptuous, okay. But I do believe it's going to be received well.
Sometimes I exaggerate, Tom. Every now and then I exaggerate, especially when I want a lot of people to buy your book. Noah in Chicago, Illinois, watching on YouTube Live. We are delighted to have you, Noah. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. My question is relating to the sacraments. So I've come from a Protestant background, and I mean, I know there's a lot of differences between a Catholic approach to that and a Protestant approach to that. I have learned things in Bible classes about how a lot of analogical traditions, I know those are you guys, and then Eastern Orthodox, and then kind of some Anglicans, how they approach the sacraments as being something that is used to experience grace, or and I know I've heard you guys say as something that is used to enact grace. I'm trying to reconcile how you would differentiate that. So ultimately, that's my question: is how do you differentiate a view of the sacraments that says they give or enact grace or forgiveness with earning your salvation by doing a physical act, and then kind of relatedly, I mean, like the question that comes up from that is, what happens if someone who's not serious about faith internally, you know, rejecting the church internally, but it's going through the sacraments as a routine or as an obligation, you know, to someone else, or just because they have done it growing up? What happens if they do it? And even like if they do it repeatedly and turn away from the faith, or you know, wouldn't ever go back to it.
Sure. Tom, all right. Okay, Noah. I think we got it. Did you get it, Tom?
Yes.
Okay.
First of all, I start off, Noah, that we don't believe that we can earn our salvation through our good works. We do believe that by responding to God's grace, we can be blessed with further grace by our actions, by choosing yes or no to God, and we growing in holiness, kind of like Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of the Lord. Also, as we talked about in Romans 2:6, 7, and 8, that with regard to those who choose and do good, not of their own, but because they respond to God's grace, they will be blessed. Those who act badly and reject God will lose out. It is true, too, that you mentioned some people can commit a mortal sentence. Just because you receive a sacrament, right, doesn't mean you automatically benefit from that sacrament. For example, the Eucharist. St. Paul makes it clear that those who eat and drink the body and blood of the Lord eat and drink a judgment upon themselves. This is in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So even though Jesus says, he who eats my body and drinks my blood has eternal life and I will raise him on the last day, that's provided that person is receiving God in a faithful disposition, that is in a state of grace, has gone to confession beforehand if they've committed a mortal sin. We see that the grace of confession also in John 20, where Jesus says, receive the Holy Spirit if you hold men's sins. If you forgive men's sins, they are forgiven. If you hold them, then they are retained. So we see that grace operates as a gift, as enacted by, if you will, by the sacraments, but it's not automatic in terms of like, I can do what I want and live the way I want, and seemingly that's okay with God. No, like any other loving relationship, we need to respond to God. Now, God is merciful, and that's why we have purgatory, because people, you know, who have needs to be detached. See, purgatory is not about, you know, what God did is insufficient. Rather, it's about, I still am holding on to myself and not accepting God. So what purgatory is all about is detaching us from our attachments that are contrary to the will of God. So in a nutshell, are through the sacraments. If we are in a state of grace, we benefit from them. If we are not, such as in the Eucharist, we cannot benefit. And not only do we not benefit, but we eat and drink a judgment upon ourselves. That's why St. Paul speaks about Noah, how some people have gotten sick and even died as a result of receiving the Eucharist, the body and blood of Jesus, unworthily. Similarly, we grow in holiness when we're in that state of grace, when we grow and seek God and do his will. So there it is. It's all Christ-centered, and we can't do it apart from Christ, and any meritorious grace has got to be done and centered in Christ. It can't be apart from Christ.
Thank you so much for that answer. Would you say that, so then ultimately, receiving that through a sacrament is dependent on your own faith?
In part, well, here's the thing. The sacraments are valid irrespective of our disposition, right? So the sacrament is real. Now, if someone is baptized, for example, and they were totally, now if they went in there with a good heart, and you know, then they would have their sins forgiven. Now, unless they went in and totally, I'm making a mockery of this, then they wouldn't benefit from it. Somebody could, you know, in that sense. But so I would say the extent to which they benefit from grace is incumbent upon their disposition toward God, not simply their faith, but their actual lived disposition. You know, because one could believe in God, but not necessarily be in a state of grace because they've committed mortal sin. So it's not that our faith makes the sacraments valid, but that our faith disposition and our, whether we're in a state of grace or not, or even if we're in a state of grace, if we've got all these incrustations from venial sin and whatnot, it will affect how we benefit from those graces. So the closer you are to God, the more you're going to benefit from the graces received from God. And so we speak about it. St. Thomas Aquinas says that grace is received according to the mode of the recipient, according to the mode of the receiver. So we don't validate the sacraments by our faith, but in terms of our faith and our disposition toward God, in terms of our relationship with God, in summary, that's going to impact how much we benefit from a sacrament.
Thanks, Noah. I got to get to one more call. I appreciate that. At least we'll get to one more before we go. I want to go to Rose in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, listening to EWTN on iHeartRadio. Rose, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Good afternoon. Thank you, both of you, for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Happy to, Rose.
So I've been struggling with my coworker. He's trying to, I guess, convert me or deconvert me, for a better word, I guess. And one of the topics, which of course is not going to happen because I know what I believe.
Amen, sister.
However, one of the topics, the topics that I've been battling back and forth with him is regarding life at conception. And I asked him, well, what does the science book say? And he said, well, it says it starts at conception. Then that's a human being. That's a human being. There's no going around it. He's like, well, what if the woman was raped? And I said, I've been there, I've done that. And then he also said, well, what if they can't provide or they don't have where to live? And I'm like, well, I also was there and I did that. What if they could die from?
Well, God bless you for your witness to life. First of all, God bless you for your witness if you've been there and done that. And I think your example is to show that the humanity of an unborn child is not contingent upon the context in which that child was conceived, but rather that child is made in the image and likeness of God. And so that even though there could be circumstances surrounding the conception of a child that are evil, such as a sexual assault, the child per se is a good, and God bringing good out of bad. And there have been various testimonies of people who've been products of rape, and their parents, their mothers, fathers saw them through. And so, yes, you cannot confer personhood. A child is a child, no matter how small, no matter how that child is conceived, because humanity is based upon not how we were conceived, but that we are conceived and that we are made in God's image and likeness, and that clearly from a scientific standpoint, we are clearly human from the point of conception.
Rose, are you looking for like the silver bullet argument to give him that will convince him?
I need something that will just Trump everything, because then he said, well, if there's no heart rate, for example, why can't I use Plan B? And I said, well, if life starts at conception,
precisely,
and if there is conception, by the way, conception can happen within the next 30 minutes after you've had, you know,
sure.
You've engaged in that, you know, act. So, like,
Rose, yeah, you don't need us at all. You're
doing fine. And in addition to what I've already said about how we're conceived, that we're conceived in God's image and likeness, that everything after conception is not a metaphysical change in the child, but rather development. That is maturation. So what we have is development thereafter, not a fundamental change in this human organism, but rather what we see is development of that human organism. And if any, like I used to say, if you want to find out what the difference between a fertilized embryo and a mere cell that's unfertilized, not a human person, follow the progress of each for 9 months and you'll clearly see the difference.
Rose, you are so wonderful. I'd love to send you a book called Persuasive Pro-Life, written by our own Trent Horn. If you hang on, we'll get your address if you'd like, and we'll send you that book. And also, I hope you'll call back again, because you're actually a pretty strong witness for life. You're just dealing with somebody who's very resistant, and we can't control that part. All we can control is that we tell the truth. And you seem to be at least as equipped as Tom and I to do that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say more equipped than us, Tom. Does that hurt your feelings?
She certainly, in terms of her personal witness and what she's been through, she exceeds us for sure.
Rose, thanks for the call. Sorry we got to go. Hang on, we'll send you the book. Tom Nash, 20 Answers the Rosary, available now at shop.catholic.com. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, buddy. God bless everybody.
See you tomorrow right here.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seeing the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the Daily Gospel to the Rosary to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.